everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Southern Pride Podcast. I'm Rex Nelson of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. This is a production of the Democrat Gazette. We get together every couple of weeks and visit with some of the most interesting Arkansans I know. Jay Chesser, president and CEO of the Little Rock Regional Chamber of Commerce. I guess you qualify as an interesting Arkansan, don't you, Jay?
I was going to say, Rex, you've probably gotten to the bottom of the barrel if you finally got to me.
No, it is a pleasure to have you. You have headed the Little Rock Regional Chamber since 06, is that right?
That's correct.
Wow. Yeah. Time flies when we're having fun. I wanted to talk a little bit, everything from economic development to community development to kind of the future of Little Rock and the Little Rock area. I don't have to tell anybody out there that we've been in the midst of a pandemic since March of last year. But Jay, it seems to me, and it's your job to say positive things. It's my job to tell the truth at the newspaper. But even telling the truth, it seems to me that Little Rock's been on a bit of a roll, even during the worst of the pandemic when we didn't have vaccines yet last year. We got the Amazon announcement that Little Rock would be a regional distribution hub, and not only the huge facility at the port of Little Rock, but another huge facility across the river in North Little Rock to go along with what they already did to the Ojacuzi plant in Southwest Little Rock. I mean, thousands of jobs there, and that had to give everybody a boost, I would think, last year, right in the middle of that pandemic.
You know, it's interesting. We went through a court scenario, or actually the city of Little Rock and the city of North Little Rock went through a court scenario about economic development funding in about 2014, if memory serves me right, where a lower court ruled that it was not a good public use of funding to do economic development work, even though it had been done that way here and across the country for decades. And long story short, that put us on hold, Rex, for almost 3 years. We thought it was going to be a 6-month thing.
Yeah.
And it put us on hold for almost 3 years in terms of marketing. We had to reduce staff, obviously, because of the public-private partnership. When the public side, which is about 30% of that economic development budget, wasn't there and it was cut off, obviously, we had to stop a lot of our marketing stuff. So fast forward from that to October of 2017, the Amazon HQ2 project. And of course, I won't rehash the whole story, but we had a lot of folks here locally that felt like we ought to be in that mix and should have a shot of landing a project that clearly, based upon their criteria, we didn't fit.
Right.
It wasn't that we didn't want it and we didn't want them. We just didn't fit what specifically they asked. In fact, I've often laughingly said then and now, one of the requirements was to have an international airport. And you've got kids in Texas. And while Texas, our friends down there, think of themselves as a whole other country, just because we have direct flights there doesn't mean we have an international airport. And I said that on national NPR and even had them laughing.
Yeah.
But we ran a campaign in October of 2017, effectively telling Amazon that, hey, we love you. We'd love to have you. We're not the right thing for you in this particular project. But if you have something else, we'd love to talk to you about it.
Keep us on the radar, in other words.
And we used their process. There were 237 or 238 communities that made a proposal for that project. Obviously, it was very public, which is unusual, as you know, in the economic development circles. But we used that project as a kind of a next step for the first time in several years out into the national marketplace to try to get people to look at Little Rock. And interestingly enough, early on in the campaign that day, folks didn't get it. But by the end of the day, they were. And so what happened was we put this together in 9 days, including a new website where we could see who was coming. We didn't know who they were in the company, but we knew which company it was. We knew where they were going. And then we were feeding them back information. We had a team of folks both at the chamber and at the tech park that day, feeding back information to these people as they were coming onto that website, looking at specific things. We know exactly when Amazon came on. We know that early the next week, we had our first contact with Amazon. And so all that to say, that kind of literally gave us a rocket boost of marketing momentum right before things began to change. And of course, we didn't know they were going to change in March of 2020. But at that moment in time, our pipeline of prospects had gotten pretty robust. In fact, some of the best that I had ever seen in my career. And so, you know, the second week of March, I'm coming back from Miami. The world is shutting down. I've never seen the Atlanta airport that that slow.
Right.
And we literally thought that, as we had seen back in 08, 09, when the national and international economy went off the cliff, that everything would just stop.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not only did it not stop, we had people in our office throughout the entire pandemic. The majority of the staff were working part-time from home.
Gotcha.
But we had a handful of key people that never quit coming to the office, because not only did the economic development stuff not slow down or stop, it actually sped up. And it took about a 30, 45-day hiatus, but then companies began to realize, because of orders, that they didn't have the capacity to fulfill what was currently happening, much less what they were then forecasting would happen. And so all that to say, we got to March of 2020 in a good spot from a prospect pipeline perspective, but then began to see it grow even more from there. And then when the Amazon project, obviously Amazon doesn't normally announce things.
Right.
And so when their first project, which was the Southwest Little Rock facility, the old jacuzzi place, in fact, even to this day, they really haven't announced it. And so that's just the way they operate. And so once the world began to see that first project, they didn't know that we were working three more at that moment in time.
That was high visibility for everybody on Interstate 30.
And so when the word got out about the 3.7 million square foot facility at the port being built, then everything began to change, because it's a lot like I used the furniture industry as an example. Mm-hmm. Randy Land is a good friend of mine with the Furniture Association. Furniture stores don't normally go and locate out in the middle of nowhere where there's nothing else. They co-locate with others.
Car
dealerships,
critical mass.
The whole night. Mm-hmm. And so when Amazon made that initial announcement that they were doing this one project, that again became four before it was all said and done, it opened eyes to folks that hadn't really looked at us from the perspective of logistics and distribution. But when you look at 30 and 40 intersect here from an interstate standpoint, you've got the two class one rail lines that intersect here just north of the port. And from a railroad perspective, that's a really big deal, because then you're not stuck with only being able to use one carrier or another.
Right. You have two carriers.
Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. Thirdly, you've got the river, which, as we've seen in this global supply chain scenario that's playing out in front of us right now, is also really important. And then one of the things that we don't often talk about is air. So, you know, Dassault Falcon Jet flies in green airplanes, as they call them, every so often from France. And so we have a lot of air traffic that is commercial and global from the perspective of parts and things of that nature that's coming in here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put all those things together, and it's kind of like throwing a pebble into a lake. You know, that pebble hits in the water, and then you have those concentric circles that, well, if you look at Memphis as a hub of logistics and distribution, and they've done an amazing job with it, as it filled up, companies began to look for that next closest concentric circle that had rail, river, roadway, and air access, to look at what else, where is that next place that we could look to grow this business from that perspective? Because distribution and logistics isn't going down. It's only continuing to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And so then at the same time, we had some manufacturing projects. HMS, we had just, we're in the process of announcing HMS. So you probably don't know the name of the company, but if you know the Hefty brand products, they make them. And we're now the only place in North America where they're making them.
Mm-hmm.
They pretty much source all of their product through third parties in different countries. So all of a sudden, those things began to take place. And the sting of losing the CZ project, when CZ actually went and bought Colt, and because of that, basically put this project on hold, not only was immediate.
And you're talking about a European-based gun manufacturer, for those not familiar.
I'm sorry. I'm just I'm just blowing
up
here.
Oh, no,
just. But the sting of losing that project immediately was assuaged by everything else that was coming in. And so we talk about jobs and we talk about opportunity, and we'll just use the Amazon scenario as an example. So Amazon came in, and when they finally said what they were going to do, it was supposedly 825,000 square feet at the port and 1,000 jobs. Well, as we now know, it's 3.7 million square feet. And if you've not had a chance to go see that building, please do, because it's really cool to see something of that magnitude. If you get a chance to go on a tour, I'd highly recommend it. Because
I'd love to at some point. Yeah.
It's amazing. And the 1,000 jobs as of 2 weeks ago is now already over 3,100.
Wow.
And so
that's just at the port. That's not counting North Little Rock, South West Little Rock.
Not counting any of the other facilities.
So we're talking Central Arkansas, more than 5,000 jobs, right, Jay?
And more than 5 million square feet of space for just one project.
Wow. And I hope I'm right on this, because I put it in the paper, but you correct me if I'm wrong. The best I can tell, that's the biggest single job announcement impetus for Central Arkansas since the Little Rock Air Force Base was created in the 1950s.
If there's been another one, I'm unaware of it.
I couldn't find one.
In fact, we were talking about, when's the last time that Little Rock, and when I say Little Rock, I'm talking about the metro area. Mm-hmm. When's the last time Little Rock had 5 million square feet of construction underway for any one project? And we don't know that that's ever happened before. And so that's a great win. That's obviously a great boost to this economy. But what it also does is it signals to the world, what did they find there that maybe we didn't know about? You know, we can talk about logistical advantages. We can talk about talent advantages. We can talk about equating miles to minutes. And so folks will drive 45 and 60 plus miles one way to a good job, because we still equate miles to minutes in terms of what typically happens in a lot of metro areas is a site consultant will come in, stick a pin in the map, draw a diameter of 20 mile radius around that, want to know everything about that 20 mile radius, but nothing outside of it. Because usually in those places, it'll take people 40 minutes to an hour to make that 20-mile commute.
Right.
Here, that's, you know, that's why we are so interested in working and have been for decades now on keeping our infrastructure so that we don't have bottlenecks of traffic. We have what we call rush minutes, not rush hour. And so all of that's so important, because that allows people who, for whatever reason, want to live in Searcy. You were talking about being in Searcy,
right,
or in Hot Springs, or in Benton, Bryant, Conway, Cabot, and all of the places that's closer in. While we want them living in Little Rock and we want to give them reasons to live in Little Rock, it allows us to use a labor shed of people in a far greater geographical area than many of our competitors can. And so we zealously guard our infrastructure investment so that we can get people to and from places in an efficient manner.
Bottom line on all of Amazon, what you're in essence telling me is this has put us on the map as a distribution and logistics hub, a mid-American hub, along with Memphis, right?
Yes. And again, we've marketed these assets, and there are companies here that have taken advantage of those assets, but it took that major name to effectively put their stamp of approval on it by creating what they're creating here and having other folks take a look at it and go, wow, let's go take a look at that also.
Yeah. Let me change gears just a second. One of the things that we know that when people move to an area, one of the first things they check out is the quality of education, of course. Some good news just recently, as voters in both the Little Rock School District and the Pulaski County Special School District overwhelmingly approved issues. I think that sends a strong message of support for our public schools, Jay, but also the chamber. You have been very involved in education. Some people think that the chamber is all about just recruiting business, but you have gotten very involved in education with the Forward Learning Project. Talk a little bit about that and where that fits into the big picture of developing Little Rock, helping Little Rock fully achieve its potential.
You know, it's interesting. When I first came here in actually February of 2005 to run the Regional Economic Development Group before being offered the opportunity to serve as the CEO of the chamber, we talked about public public education and public safety. And we'll talk about the other one here in a little bit. And the reality of that is we have four school districts here in Pulaski County.
Right.
Four good school districts. We've got wonderful schools in each of the four. We've got schools that need help in each of the four. And yet what we've seen over time is folks voting with their vehicles to go to an outlying county, typically adjacent, wanting to live there because they feel that's a better public education. Well, we have tried working with our friends and colleagues in especially the Little Rock School District, a whole lot of different things to try to help get it to a better place. And so a lot of those things have had some marginal victories, but nothing of any significance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talk about the reading at the third grade level, and we can go through all the statistics and the barometer of how many jail cells we're going to need based upon that percentage. But while we're working on the younger folks, we kept looking for ways to engage students at those older years of school to try to get them engaged in not only learning better, but then having more opportunities once they leave school. And interestingly enough, I was looking at and interviewing people for a position that I wasn't real sure we were going to actually hire. But in the midst of that, I had the opportunity to interview a young man named James Reddish, who at the time was with the Council of Adult Experiential Learning in Chicago. He had previously been with the Louisville, Kentucky Chamber and had run the Economic Development Division there. I brought him in for an in-person interview as I was trying to wind down this process. And one of the reasons why I brought him in was because while he was in Louisville, he helped implement what's called the Ford Next Generation Learning Framework in the Louisville Public Schools. And I was really curious to talk more about that because I've always said that we can't program our way out of this. It has to be a methodology of a framework of how we're going to teach and help young people learn, because this reading program or that CTE program, those things alone won't help us get to where we need to be. And so James came in. What he didn't realize was I was really interviewing him more in regard to his experience there than the position that I didn't think we were going to end up hiring for. Well, I was so impressed with not only he and his experience, because he talked about how they failed, how they tried to cut some corners in implementing it. And unfortunately, it failed and they had to back up and start over. And now they've had some significant success. And so as I was heading back to the airport that afternoon, I looked at him and I said, you know, I'm going to tell you that this position probably isn't going forward for these reasons, but nobody knows it yet. I have this other position that I would really like you to consider, because the Ford program is something that we've seen a little bit about. Now I know a whole lot more about it. And if we can get our four school districts, because we couldn't just do it with one.
Yes, good point.
If we could get our four school districts to agree to walk this path with us and the teachers be a part of creating something instead of having something done to them, so to speak, then I thought we could have success. And, you know, fast forward nearly about four years now, and we were blessed to bring he and his wife Caroline to town. We met initially with Mike Poor of the Little Rock School District, and we talked about this program that the Nashville, Tennessee public school system, which is kind of the beginning of the Ford Next Generation Learning Framework. We talked about them having this event and that we would want to take him to go see, feel, and touch what they've done, how they've done it. And at the end of that meeting, he agreed. And at the end of that meeting, I looked at him and I said, and you know, I don't know these other superintendents very well. You know them a lot better than I do. I'd ask that you ask them to go with us too. And so long story short, we at the time, the only superintendent who wasn't with us was the Pulaski County Special School District superintendent. And that was only because they had a court date that he had to be here for. Gotcha. So he sent his senior level staff with us. Well, that started us on the pathway of, first of all, them seeing this. Then secondly, coming back and talking about it with some of their senior leadership, and then us sending more people to see it. And so we were literally, it felt like we had a bus going to Nashville, Tennessee see every other month to show people what that looked like, how it could come about and how it could be implemented here to be effective, but that it was designed not about a program. It was designed for a young person in the ninth grade to get exposed to different career pathways, then decide from that which career pathway they wanted to spend their 10th, 11th, and 12th grade years learning through the lens of. And so it's English, math, science, social science, all those things that kids have to learn and master to graduate from high school. But if you're interested in healthcare, it's English from a healthcare perspective or English from an advanced manufacturing perspective. I laugh about advanced manufacturing and welding. And so most kids go into geometry class and go, why do I need to learn geometry? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's talk about a right angle and how you create that right angle. Let's take that into your next class and teach you how to weld that right angle. And then after you've welded that right angle, let's take it into the third class in science, test it for the validity of the strength of that weld. Now all of a sudden, kids are learning in the framework, in the lens of something that they're interested in, as opposed to page 155 of the McGraw-Hill textbook. In their words, not mine, kids, so no one please take offense to this. It's not grandma preaching to them mm-hmm. as to what they ought to know. They're wanting to learn this because they see applicability and what they can do with it. And so if you look at the about 40 or so communities across America that are doing this or have been doing it for a few years, core academic achievement goes up for every student. So you don't opt into this program. Every ninth grader in every high school in Pulaski County this day mm-hmm. are now in what's called Freshman Academy. So you don't opt in and opt out. It's not for this group of people and not for that other. It's for everybody.
Everybody, yeah.
And so then in the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade years, once they've chosen the pathway they want to learn in, they're with the same group of teachers all 3 years. So it's not a teacher teaching you this semester and you never see them again. This same group of teachers and about 200 to 250 students in each career pathway are together for their sophomore, junior, and senior mm-hmm. years. So this allows relationships to be built between that teacher, that counselor, that coach, because they're all a part of this process, and that young person. And it's really difficult for a young person to fall through the cracks in this. And we have a lot of mobility with kids because they may be in this school district this year or this semester, and they may, because of their parents moving, if all four school districts are teaching in this framework and utilizing this methodology, then they're walking right in. It may be a different career pathway, but they're walking right into another scenario that they're used to because they were doing that in the school that they came from. And so that's why you look at the Nashville statistics, and this is really, really, really surprised me. First of all, the Nashville public school system has 24 different languages
wow.
spoken. I have no idea how diverse they are.
An international city that had become. Yeah.
They started with a just below 58% graduation rate. Think about that. Nashville, mm-hmm. Tennessee, the star of the United States mm-hmm. from an economic development standpoint, 15 years ago had less than 58% of their public school students graduate.
Again, no idea.
You implement this system. These kids get engaged. Core academic achievement goes up for every kid. Their graduation rate goes from 58% to 85%. The number of students grows from 54,000 to over 80,000 students. And oh, by the way, the average age of a gang member in Nashville, Tennessee went from 16 to 21.
Mm.
So it's changing.
You didn't have new members joining. Yeah.
It's changing lives of kids that are going to college
mm-hmm.
and those kids who aren't going to college or who didn't think they were that then decide maybe they do, or they're going through a two-year program or they're going to a certification program. They're leaving high school with skills in that industry sector that they've chosen to learn through. They're leaving that high school with skills to immediately go into the workforce if they want to, or to at least have certification or hours towards a two-year degree that then gives them the opportunity to finish that, not in 2 years, but maybe in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting.
It is exciting. Before we run out of time, we talked about logistics, distribution. I want to talk about a couple of other sectors of the Little Rock economy that are very important and that I'm pretty bullish on. One, of course, is healthcare. Little Rock has long been a regional healthcare center, and that seems to continue to grow. And with the aging of the American population, that will only continue to grow. The other one is the financial sector. I've written quite a bit lately. Full disclosure, before I came back to the newspaper full time, I was director of corporate communications for Simmons Bank. So I spent a few years in banking. But you look at Bank OZK and its headquarters, it's built in George Gleason's dream of an entire corporate campus out there initially. You look at Simmons Growth, already filled up the River Market, bought OZK's old headquarters on Chenal, just phenomenal. They're on Chenal, a whole financial quarter popping up with First Community Bank, Bank Corp South. Over on Cantrell, I live at the Ranch, Jay, now Arkansas Federal Credit Union adding in to OZK, creating another financial quarter. So there are two sectors that seem really bright. Let's start on the financial sector. I'm not saying we're going to be Charlotte, but Little Rock is really growing into a regional banking hub, it seems like to me.
It really is. You know, when we were putting together the tech park and trying to decide the direction that could go, we originally were trying to look at commercializing research coming out of UAMS. Mm-hmm. And once we got deeper into that, we realized what the time frame would take to do that. And so while we're still focused on that and working on it, we realized we needed to go into a faster type opportunity to grow business. And so I had the opportunity to, we just created the Venture Center. We literally were having our first board meeting. Chris Klein with FIS, I had never met before.
Yeah.
FIS has a facility out here in West Little Rock with over—
dating back to the old Systematics, which was formed here in Little Rock.
Right. And you know, they have over 1,000 folks out there. And so I was talking about this project that I was trying to get another company to look at being a part of, literally focused and really taking from what Nashville had done with HCA on a project over there through their Nashville Entrepreneur Center that we were doing some work with to create our own venture center. And so all that to say, that wasn't going well with the other company. I was talking about it. Chris Klein came up to me to break and said, hey, you know, if that doesn't work with them, would you consider doing this with FIS? And I laughingly turned around and I said, when can we have a conversation?
You're on.
He said, well, I said, no, it's not going to work with them. And that very quickly led to a call scheduled between Gary Norcross, the CEO of FIS, who actually I was at Fayetteville with, but didn't know him way back when. And to your point about Systematics, you know, what we forget is in 1968, this little company called Systematics created an industry, the financial technology industry.
Yeah. And you know, FinTech, as it's known now, but it really started here in Little Rock.
Stevens' story it'll balance these books for 12 hours a day. What's it going to do for the other 12? And then, you know, boom, a new industry is formed, which is really cool. So we didn't really know what we had when Gary agreed to work with us and partner with us to create the FIS FinTech Accelerator. But we knew that with all of those retired Systematics folks and all Teleinformation System folks, which Systematics became before FIS purchased them, we knew that we had some differentiating experience here that no one else had. And so we started down this pathway, and interestingly enough, it got so big so fast, a lot bigger than any of us really ever dreamt that it would, that we're now the Independent Community Bankers of America came to us 2 years later. This is now 4 years ago, and asked us to at the Venture Center to run a financial accelerator for them. This means that 20 companies a year are coming here from all across the country and the world.
Yeah, coming from all over the world to spend time in Little Rock.
And then local banks, as well as banks around the country flying. I think in the latest FIS iteration, there were 200 banks that were engaged with these 10 companies. The really cool part about that is we started it with, hey, this is where it started. This is where we want to grow the new from. And what's happened is it's actually allowed us to be able to locate some of these really high-tech, new, innovative companies from other parts of the country and the world to come to Little Rock. Bond.ai is a great example. Hexonica is another example. We've got a third one that we'll be announcing later this month that's moving their corporate headquarters from outside the country here in Little Rock. And so the local banking mecca, as I call it, because Little Rock has always been a financial center, not only for the state of Arkansas, but now this part of America, it continues to grow, and we're feeding it with new innovation, new technology. They're not having to go to New York to find it. They're not having to go to the Valley to find it. Or they're not having to go to Austin to find it. They're finding it right here because these companies have chosen to locate here and now recruiting talent for a Simmons Bank, for any of the other banks, Centennial or whomever, recruiting talent from outside the market into here has gotten a whole lot easier because they're now seeing stuff here that they're not seeing anywhere else in the country or the world. And, you know, when Finovate, which is kind of the granddaddy of the fintech industry in terms of the award side of it, when they named us the best financial technology accelerator in the world in 2020, it's much like an Amazon moment.
Yeah.
For the manufacturing and the logistics side, all of a sudden eyes open and went, instead of asking the question, why Little Rock?
Why
now,
not?
Now they're saying when?
Yeah.
And
why not Little Rock? Yeah.
And so we're seeing that activity continue to grow. We're literally, from the tech park perspective, working now on our second phase. We originally thought we were going to build a new building to be that second phase. We're now going to take an existing building that we already own.
Right next door here to where we're taping this podcast.
Yeah. We're going to take an existing building that we already own, that we've had some folks leasing it space in there for since we've owned the property. And we're going to renovate it as the next phase of the. And the sad part about it is it's a problem, but it's a great problem to have. We've got three different projects right now that want to be in the tech park that we just don't have space for.
Yeah.
Even through the pandemic, it stayed full.
Interesting.
It's pretty amazing.
Interesting. And real quickly, before we run out of time, healthcare sector, I see no slowing in the growth there. What an economic engine for Central Arkansas.
And we have to continue to feed it. You know, interestingly enough, when Cam Patterson came in as the chancellor of UAMS, because of his entrepreneurial activity, a lot of folks don't realize he co-wrote a book on commercializing research into companies. And so we went to him and talked about the adaptability of financial technology into the healthcare world. And that in many cases, a financial transaction is no different than a healthcare transaction in terms of confidentiality, secrecy, and the speed at which that information needs to flow. Well, Cam agreed and had two different doctors that are leading their innovation work at UAMS meet with us. We had seven companies, four of which at the time were outside the country, pitched to those seven doctors. These were companies that have been part of our FinTech Accelerator work. And today, UAMS is doing work with one of them and looking at the possibility of two more. And so we're taking what people think as financial technology and helping people understand that with just a little tweak. It's not a vertical industry sector. It's a horizontal industry sector because it has applicability in health tech. It has applicability in ag tech all the way across. And so what started as a financial technology thing is now morphing into technology for a whole bunch of different industries and companies wanting to come here to be a part of that, not only for FIS, but because of the healthcare industry that's here as well.
Exciting times. Jay, I've got a lot I didn't get to. I want to have you back in a couple of months.
I would love to come back.
All right. Thank you so much. Jay Chesser, President and CEO of the Little Rock Regional Chamber of Commerce. I'm Rex Nelson. Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Southern Fried Podcast, a production of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.